The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see Kalshi.com/regulatory.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. Want to bring a little Hollywood excitement to your day? Take a few spins with Chumba Casino's brand new game, Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways. It's free and features 10,000 ways to play, giving you nonstop action, including thrilling bonus respins and cascading reels. Every spin brings something new. So step into the spotlight, enjoy the excitement, and play today at ChumbaCasino.com.
Ch-ch-ch-ch-chumba. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, friends, and welcome to another spine-tingling episode of Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. I'm your host, Steve Taylor, and tonight we've prepared two tales guaranteed to leave you breathless. Both of tonight's stories are featured courtesy of Velox Books, a small press with an enormous appetite for horror. I'll tell you more about them later in the show, so stick around. Before we begin, don't forget to leave us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're tuning in. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that thumbs up, subscribe, and ring the bell so you never miss a moment of terror. And if you want an ad-free experience with exclusive perks, become a patron at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com. Your support keeps the scares coming. Now, turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our first story tonight, written by Michael Marks, takes us to a haunted house unlike any other. It's a place where no two experiences are the same and where your deepest fears take center stage. For Kevin and his friends, what starts as a fun Halloween outing becomes a horrifying journey that will haunt them forever. This story is performed by Jeff Sturtevant, a multi-talented voice actor, audio engineer, and author, as well as host of Chilling Tales for Dark Nights collaborative Wednesday night episodes. You can find Jeff's narrations and books on Amazon and Audible, or visit flexfiction.com to learn more. Now, courtesy of Velox Books, from the twisted mind of Michael Marks, I present to you the scariest haunted house in the world.
Fuck Halloween. That's right, you heard me. I used to be like you. I used to like it just fine. Dress up, go to a party, get tossed and scare the shit out of your friends. It's all just a good time and a night to celebrate the dark and macabre. That is, until one of those nights you realize that it's not just all in good fun, and your brain ends up so fucked from the experience that you scream at the aisle full of plastic skeletons at the drugstore. For me, that experience started with a flyer that my friend Jimmy found under the welcome mat of his family's house. I can still remember him running up to me with that shit-eating grin on his face. like you just found the golden ticket.
Kev, check this shit out.
He was waving the orange piece of paper as he ran up the steps of my porch. He slapped it into my hands before I could even ask what the hell he was so excited about.
This looks like it's gonna be awesome.
I looked at the orange papered flyer and immediately eye rolled. I was a cynical kid. I'd lost my father to suicide at a young age, and it left me bitter before my time. I scanned the words on the flyer, already hoping I could convince Jimmy this was a stupid idea. I can still remember exactly what was written on it. Come and see the scariest haunted house in the world. Thrill as your heart races. Chill, feel it straight down to your bones. No two experiences will be the same, guaranteed. All ages admitted. Admission fee for all brave enough to attend. 6 p.m. to 12 a.m. Only open on All Hallows Eve. Located at Patterson Farm off Briar Creek Road. These words, of course, all framed the silhouette of a spooky cartoon haunted house. Typical moon in the background. Typical bats flying around. And a typical black cat standing out front. I looked at Jimmy and the big dumb grin on his face and wondered how I could be friends with someone so easily entertained. You're slow, right? I asked, handing him back the flyer and walking away to sit on my porch swing.
Fuck you, Kevin. I think it sounds sweet.
He turned the flyer over in his hands and studied it for likely the 100th time that day.
I mean, it says no two experiences will be the same. And it calls itself the scariest haunted house in the world.
Every haunted house calls itself the scariest haunted house in the world, numbnuts. I put my feet up on the porch railing and leaned back, still surprised I could be friends with someone so dumb. It's a marketing thing. It's all bullshit. I mean, honestly, do you really think an all-ages admitted spook house in the middle of farm country's gonna knock your socks off?
You never know. It says no two experiences will be the same. Maybe they tailor it to who's walking through.
The excitement in his voice was wavering as he attempted to battle against my cynicism. Give me a break, I scoffed. It's free to boot. It's probably going to be a bunch of cheap plastic props some farmer dug out of his garage. And a Sounds of the Spooky mixtape.
Alyssa already said she's down to go.
Finally, Jimmy had said something that piqued my interest. He'd pulled the trump card of Alyssa. She'd started at her high school a few months earlier and was easily one of the best-looking girls I'd ever seen. Jimmy and she became somewhat friendly after he helped her get caught up in English Lit. He never made any kind of move on her because he knew very well that I was crushing hard for her. I sat up with a stone face and looked him dead in the eyes.
Really? Her brother's having a party at 9, but she said we should head up super early, beat the crowd, then go to the party.
Jimmy held the paper up next to his face and smiled.
Let's have some fun. What do you say, you dick?
Of course, my dumbass said yes. Or I wouldn't be here telling you this story now. Alyssa had borrowed her parents' car, and we rode up to Briar Creek Road. We made the turn onto the property of Patterson Farm about 6:15. Jimmy and Alyssa were both excited as we drove up, and I was wondering exactly how they could be so naive. We were 16 at this point, and they were both acting like they were 7. You can imagine my smug satisfaction as we pulled up to what was easily the most empty and pathetic-looking haunted house I'd ever seen in my life. It basically looked as if someone had strung together a bunch of ready-to-build sheds into a 5x5 square and painted the whole mess black. There were cheap cobwebs and plastic bats hanging from the outside, and a homemade sign dangling from above the door that read, "Welcome to Patterson Farms. scariest haunted house in the world. The most telling part was the lack of customers. There were no patrons lined up outside to take the trip through, and it being Halloween night, and this being a town without a whole lot to do, looked as if Jimmy and Alyssa were the only two to get suckered in. "Are you fucking serious with this?" I shouted out, laughing and pointing in the direction of the haunted house. "Look at this place." I clapped Jimmy on the shoulder. "I told you, dude. I fucking told you." "Maybe all the good stuff's inside," said Alyssa. "Some of the haunted houses back in Kentucky looked like shit until you got inside of them." Her voice was uncertain, but she smiled in Jimmy's direction.
"Could be."
Jimmy was already trying to figure out a way to justify coming to that wreck. I'd known him a long time, and I could see him trying to excuse his dumbass choice. Alyssa parked in the dirt lot next to the house, and before I could make my case as to why we should just bail, the passenger door was thrown open by an older man dressed in a black suit and top hat.
"The first brave souls of the evening. Welcome, one and all."
He stuck his hand in the car, looking for Jimmy to give it a shake, and he timidly obliged. The man grasped his hand and practically pulled him from the car, smiling and patting him on the back.
"Come, come, let's get this show on the road."
"Someone's a bit excited to see actual humans," I said under my breath in Alyssa's direction. She turned to me with wide eyes and nodded. We got out of the car and joined Jimmy by the side of the old man.
"I'm Phineas Patterson, and welcome to the scariest haunted house in the world,"
the old man shouted as we all lined up in front of him. He gave off the vibe of a sad old grandpa that was doing his best to act excited for the kids. A carnival barker well past his prime.
"Come along, brave souls."
Mr. Patterson waved his hand for us to follow and started hobbling over toward the haunted house set up on shaky legs. Jimmy and Alyssa followed him with a shrug. I guess they were figuring they were going to make the best of it. And I brought up the rear with a less than enthusiastic pace. As we stepped in front of what I guess could be called the front door, I saw all the cheap decorations in their full glory. Fake blood handprints lined the outside walls, strung up orange pumpkin lights, cheap cobwebs, and plastic skeletons covering the outside walls. Next to the door was a boy sitting in an old rocking chair. He looked like he couldn't have been more than 8 or 9. He was wearing a devil's mask and rocking back and forth, just staring at us. It was the first genuine feeling of the creeps I got that night, as those yellow plastic eyes stared at me. Mr. Patterson walked over next to the boy and patted him on the head.
"Never mind a little devil. He's a bit shy around visitors."
He flashed a yellow-toothed smile.
"All right, who's heading in first?"
"First?" Jimmy asked. "Can we not all go in together?"
"No, no, no, no. This is a tailor-made experience. One at a time. A few minutes after the first one, the next one goes. It's much scarier alone. Trust me."
Again, that yellow toothy smile. This time, it made me raise an eyebrow. The old man's acting had taken on a much more sinister tone. I had to give him credit. He was putting his all into it.
"I'll go."
Alyssa stepped forward. I would have expected Jimmy to go first, but his eyes were locked with the kid in the devil mask. He didn't even realize a question had been asked till Alyssa answered it.
"Ladies first. I love it,"
shouted Mr. Patterson, grabbing the door handle and pulling it open. The open doorway was covered with a black sheet from the inside.
"I must implore you, young lady, to keep moving. It's best not to linger too long."
see you guys on the other side. Alyssa looked back at us with a smile and disappeared beyond the sheet. Mr. Patterson let the door go and it slammed shut behind her. It sent a sudden chill up my spine.
Who is going to head in next?
I looked at Jimmy once again, expecting him to resume his childlike excitement about the whole situation. Instead, he looked at me with eyes that seemed full of worry.
You go first, Kev, he whispered to me.
Are you fucking serious? I said. Don't tell me you're actually scared of this place.
It's not that.
He was quick to defend against my accusation.
I just feel kind of weird suddenly. I'll bring up the rear, I just need a minute.
Whatever, I said, stepping forward. I guess it's me, old man. Mr. Patterson looked at his watch and then at the kid in the devil's mask, as if looking for his approval. The devil kid looked at me and nodded, signaling Mr. Patterson to grab the door handle. The old man once again flashed me a toothy grin.
Are you ready, son?
He asked me, his voice low and sinister. As long as it's still free, Gramps. I squared my shoulders and stood in front of the door.
Admission's free, my brave soul.
He chuckled to himself as he pulled the door open.
The real cost is within.
I laughed at his cheesy attempt to give me a chill and walked forward through the black sheet and into the room, the sound of the heavy door slamming behind me as I did. The first thing I was struck by was the sickly sweet plastic smell of the trash bags lining the walls. The only source of light were strings of dimly lit plastic pumpkin lights strung up just as they had been outside. Straight ahead of me, I could see another door framed by plastic tombstones on either side. The sign on the door read, "Start here," and was drawn in red with drops to mimic splattered blood. It was all typically corny and very cheaply done. Any mood that had been set up by the creepy devil kid and Mr. Patterson's wild-eyed acting was immediately crushed. What a waste of fucking time, I muttered to myself as I pulled the "Start Here" door open with a creak and stepped through. The next room was draped in a thick mist from a fog machine, and I could feel the chill of the air through my jacket. I could hear the ticking of a strobe light as the room quickly alternated between pitch black and fully lit, almost instantly disorienting me. I heard the door slam shut behind me and turned back to see there was no handle on my side. I heard the whirring of a motor from above me and watched as another sign was slowly lowered on ropes. It was written in that same cheap blood splatter effect and said, "Find the way forward." I could feel the frown droop across my face as I read the words in between flashes of light. This place wasn't scary, but it sure as fuck was doing its best to be annoying. I could see a hallway in front of me and started walking down it, hoping I would run into Alyssa at some point. The place seemed so cheap and crappy, though, I was nearly sure she'd already found her way out. More cheap plastic skeletons lined the hallway, and at the very end, there were two hanging on opposite sides of another sign. Each one was posed to point in a different direction. The sign simply said, "Choose."
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
I'm not sure what would have happened if I had gone right. I like to think I would have walked out the door and into the low light of dusk. Disappointment firm on my face, and feeling righteous in my earlier annoyance with the evening's activity. I went left, though, and what was waiting for me to the left, I will never forget for as long as I live. I saw a wooden door that looked oddly familiar. I stood staring at it for a few seconds, trying to shake off the sense of déjà vu before reaching for the brass handle and giving it a twist. Beyond that, there were no plastic bags or skeletons, no strobe lights or rubber bats on strings. It was just a room, a little kid's room. Again, as I stepped through the door, it slammed hard behind me, and just as before, I turned to see there was no knob on the inside. There was another sign on the inside of the door, though this one made me feel greatly more unsettled than I was expecting that night. This sign simply said, "Kevin's Room," and it was framed with rocket ships blasting off toward stars. I made that sign when I was 6. It was the sign that hung over my bedroom door in our old house, the house where my father had killed himself. I looked around the room and realized that it was exactly the room I had back then. Even the toys scattered across the floor were my toys. I swallowed hard, feeling the lump in my throat. I was overtaken by a feeling of both dread and utter confusion.
"Kevin!"
I heard a man yell from outside the door.
"Kevin, you little snot nose! I told you to pick up your goddamn toys in the living room!"
It was my father's voice, and as the door swung open, there he was, larger than life, and exactly the way he was the last time I saw him. He swayed back and forth as he stepped forward into the room. The stink of booze wafted from him as he got closer and closer, continuing to grumble something about those damn toys. I backed up, just like I would have when I was little, and I feared what he might do.
"Look at you,"
he growled at me, already removing his belt.
"You grew up exactly like I thought you would. A skinny, weak, pathetic little shit."
He folded the belt in his hands and cracked it hard against the bedpost. My back hit the wall, and I felt completely lost. It was impossible. He was dead, and he'd been dead for almost 10 years.
"This isn't fucking real," I shouted at him. "You're gone, and I haven't had to deal with your bullshit in forever. You were a drunk and coward, and I'm glad you're dead. You hear me, Dad? You fucking bastard. I'm glad you're dead."
As the last words left my mouth, I watched his face fill with sorrow. He dropped the belt on the floor and looked me in the eye as he reached behind his back. Slowly, he pulled a chrome 38 pistol out from behind his back and put it to his temple. The frown on his face curled up into a smile, and suddenly he winked at me, as if I was being let in on a joke. The sound of the gunshot was deafening in the small room, and I watched the side of his head explode outward and splatter against the wall. His body crumpled down in front of me as I stood there screaming, screaming and crying. I dropped to my knees in front of him and stared down, smoke drifting out of the hole in his temple and blood pooling around his face. The door on the other side of the room creaked open, and I looked up to see Alyssa standing there,
a look of terror and confusion on her face. I stood up and rushed toward her, not knowing what else to do, and just wanting to leave that goddamned room as fast as possible. I could hear her asking questions, but my ears were still ringing from the gunshot, and I doubt I was in any state to answer, even if they weren't. I was only a couple steps away from her when I felt something grip my ankle and send me sprawling to the floor. I turned to look at what had caught my ankle, and I saw my father's corpse holding on tightly. He raised his head up to look at me with blood-filled eyes. The flesh was starting to peel away from his face, and he opened his mouth to expose a mass of maggots that had begun feeding on his tongue. I could hear Alyssa screaming and felt her hands grabbing for mine, trying to pull me away from the rotting yet now spastically lively corpse of my father. "Don't let the fucking door close!" I screamed to her as I kicked at the rotting body that refused to let go of me. My heel caught his jaw and it came clean off his face, the writhing mass of maggots landing on the powder blue carpet. "Jesus fuck! Please, God, get me out of here!" I shouted more as Alyssa pulled.
"You're just like me," I heard my father somehow say in a gurgling, failing voice. "You're just like me, and you'll end up just like me."
With my other foot, I kicked at the hand that was holding me and watched the fingers come apart like wet paper. I got free, and Alyssa pulled me to my feet, nearly yanking my shoulder from the socket. I could hear my father's guttural, drunken laughter echo in the room, even as his body fell apart, as it was devoured by the maggots it seemed to be hosting.
"Nothing but food for the flies!"
Alyssa led me out through the door as I continued screaming like a maniac. I could still hear the laughter behind me as the door slammed shut. I don't know how long I lay there on the floor of that hallway, bawling my eyes out and paralyzed in utter fear. I felt sick and scared, and Alyssa kept her arms around me, no longer bothering to ask any questions. It felt like hours that we sat just below the fog line with that strobe light bouncing off the plastic-wrapped walls. When I finally got myself collected and on my feet, Alyssa stayed close, her arms still wrapped around me. "We need to get the fuck out of here," I said, wiping the tears from my face and trying to act tough once again. "There's something seriously wrong here." She shushed me and ran her fingers through my hair in a way that should have been relaxing, but somehow just made me feel unsettled. She was acting too calm for what we had just seen. "Why are you so goddamn chill?" I said, pushing her away from me and looking at her. She looked stoned, a relaxed and easy smile on her face. "I'm just happy I finally get to have some time alone with you." She moved closer again, her hand caressing my cheek. "I've always liked you so much, Kevin. Jimmy is always hanging around. It's nice it just being us." "Alyssa, why are you telling me this now?" She was grinding her body up against me. I could smell her shampoo as she nuzzled her face into my neck. Her lips kissed softly as her hand suddenly slid down my body and over the crotch of my jeans. I let out a slight moan as she started to rub. "Don't you want me, Kevin? I know you do," she whispered in my ear, grazing her teeth over the lobe as she finished. I could hear something rapping against the wooden door that led back to the place where we had left the body of whatever was pretending to be my father. Alyssa stepped back from me again and started to take off her shirt, but I reached out a hand to stop her. despite whatever raging teenage hormones I may have had. Even I knew something was completely off. "We have to get the fuck out of here. What are you doing?" I said sternly, grabbing her by the wrist. She shook my hand away and backed off further down the hall. Tears suddenly started to fill her eyes.
"Are you rejecting me?"
she shouted.
"How could you do this? Don't you like me? Don't you want me?"
Her suddenly shrill scream filled the hallway as she began peeling off her clothes frantically. I watched as she stripped down to her underwear in stunned silence. The rapping on the door next to us became more and more intense with each layer she removed. "Alyssa, what the hell is wrong with you?" I was in a panic. I wanted to run, but didn't want to just leave her there naked in that hallway. I tried to run over to her, and she pushed me away, screaming. She began to claw at her skin, leaving long, bleeding scratch marks over her chest and stomach.
"Don't you think I'm fucking beautiful, Kevin?"
She was tearing chunks of her own flesh off now and discarding them on the ground with her clothes.
"Isn't this what you want from me?"
I watched in abject horror as she finally peeled away the skin from her torso, exposing the bleeding muscle beneath. Fat and sinew fell from her shredded body as she removed more and more of her skin. The rapping against the door grew louder and louder, sounding more like someone slamming all their weight against the door, as she screamed and cackled like a maniac. Fear overtook me, and I turned to run down the other hallway towards what I hoped would be the exit. I felt her slimy, blood-drenched hand reach out and grab my arm tightly before she slammed me up against the wall with more strength than I could have imagined. I wheezed as all the air left my lungs, and I felt her body, now naked of most of its skin, press against me. She once again nuzzled her face up to my neck, and I gagged, feeling her shredded flesh pressed to my body. "Don't you want to fuck me, Kevin?" she whispered, before finally leaning back far enough that I could see her face. The skin began to slough off her face, leaving bulging eyeballs in an exposed, blood-stained skull. Her lipless mouth opened, and she leaned in to kiss me with a protruding tongue. I pulled all my strength and finally shoved her away from me, leaving her staggered enough that I could break into a sprint. I could hear her wailing and cackling behind me as I ran through the disorienting fog and strobe lights, looking for some way out of that fucking maze. I saw more signs, but ignored any that didn't say exit. I didn't want any more. The spook house won, and I was fucking terrified beyond anything I had ever felt. It seemed never-ending and grew more and more disturbing as I ran. The plastic skeletons hanging from the walls were now limbless corpses with dangling entrails, and the trash liners on the walls felt slick with slime and blood every time I ran into one. My heart was racing, and with each corner I turned, only to find another hallway. I became convinced I was going to die in there. The voices of both Alyssa and my father followed me as I frantically searched for some way out.
"Don't you want me?"
"Just like me."
"Kevin, this is meant to be."
"Food for the flies."
I clapped my hands over my ears, trying my best to block them out as I filled the air with the sound of my own screams. I thought I was going to lose my mind and nearly lost all hope when I suddenly came to a hallway that was a dead end. There was one last sign above the door. It was written in that same cheesy, spooky writing, blood drips and all, and it appeared black in the strobing lights. "Exit." I laughed maniacally and ran up to the door, pulling on it in the vain hopes that it would just fly open, and I'd be greeted by the chill air of the October evening. It didn't move, though. No matter how much I wrenched on the door handle, it wouldn't budge, and I could hear the voices getting closer behind me. "You get under my skin, Kevin."
"You're gonna rot with the maggots, son."
They sounded like they were right behind me, but I couldn't bring myself to look. I just kept pulling on the door handle and screaming out for someone to save me. I could feel every nightmare I ever had breathing down my neck, laughing, screaming, and preparing itself to pull me apart, body and soul. I heard one final voice, the voice of a young child.
"Turn around,"
was all it said. Slowly, I turned my head to look and saw the boy in the devil mask standing a few feet from me. Behind the rubber demon's face, I knew he was smiling.
"What the fuck do you want from me?"
I shouted, my voice lacking any hope. The boy just stood staring with dead yellow eyes as the entire world fell silent.
"Boo!"
he suddenly shouted, lunging forward and startling me into the door. I felt the hinges swing open as my back hit the wood, and I went tumbling out into the crisp autumn air. As I fell backward onto my ass into the dirt, I heard the door slam shut, as the faint giggling of a child's laughter could be heard behind it. I sat there stunned, unable to process that I was even free as I stared at the outside of the spook house. The fake plastic skeletons and pumpkin lights still strung up around the outside.
"Kevin!"
I heard Jimmy shout from what seemed like miles away. I only realized he was right next to me when he grabbed me under the shoulder to try and lift me to my feet.
"Dude, you okay?"
I stared at him with a blank expression on my face, trying to find words to explain what had just happened to me. Behind him, I could see Alyssa, her head hanging down and her face solemn and broken. And I knew what I'd seen inside the haunted house hadn't been her at all.
"We need to go,"
I whispered. I could hear Mr. Patterson standing by the door, laughing a sly little laugh.
"We need to go now." "Was it that bad? What happened in there? I was feeling sick and I never actually went in. Couldn't be that bad."
Jimmy's voice was making my head hurt, and I wanted to leave. I just wanted to get as far away from that place as possible.
"It was bullshit,"
I heard Alyssa say, her eyes locking to mine as I looked up at her.
"It was just a bullshit haunted house that wasted all of our time. Kevin's right. We need to go now."
She started walking toward the car and I followed, fine with not saying another thing about what I saw inside, and having no desire to ask what she had seen either. Jimmy followed us. He kept asking questions, the confusion clear as day on his face, but I could do nothing but tune him out. As we got in the car and drove away, I saw Mr. Patterson standing by the door, waving us goodbye, the little boy in the devil mask standing at his side. When we got back to school, Jimmy told people we had gone, but no one else had gotten a flyer, and no one knew that there was ever a haunted house up at the Patterson farm. People asked Alyssa and I both what had happened, but we never said a word. And when people got bored of asking, I thanked God. One of the last times someone tried to ask me about it in class, I ended up shouting at them to stop asking me about Patterson Farm. A teacher overheard the exchange and asked what it was all about. I tried to tell her it was nothing, just something that happened up at a spook house on Patterson Farm on Halloween.
I can still remember the confused look on her face as she told me that there was no haunted house at the Patterson Farm. In fact, she said the place had been abandoned for over a year, ever since Phineas Patterson had died.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
That was The Scariest Haunted House in the World by Michael Marks, brought to life by the incredibly talented Jeff Sturtevant. As you just heard, Jeff's skill behind the microphone truly elevates these chilling tales beyond being an outstanding narrator. He is also an accomplished audio engineer and author. Don't forget to find his work on Amazon, Audible, or at flexfiction.com. And let him know how much you appreciate his contributions to the horror community. And let him know we sent you. His name is spelled Jeff, G-E-O-F-F, Sturtevant. And it's on screen and in the description for those listening on YouTube. We and Jeff thank you for your support. And let's not forget Velox Books, the publisher of tonight's stories. At Velox Books, they specialize in collections of horror, weird fiction, and imaginative tales that push the boundaries of reality. With over a decade of independent publishing experience, they've worked with Amazon bestsellers and some of the top writers from Reddit's horror community. No sleep. Learn more about them at VeloxBooks.com. That's VeloxBooks.com. Now, let's press on into the darkness with our next tale. In our second story tonight, we venture deep into the woods with a tale that will leave you questioning every shadow and whisper. Once again written by Michael Marks and courtesy of Velox Books, this story follows Nate, an experienced hiker whose solo adventures takes a terrifying turn when sinister forces begin to close in. As performed by Jeff Sturtevant, this is Whispers in the Woods.
I looked down at my compass, which was shifting steadily between north and west, seemingly unable to decide which direction I was facing. Through the trees, I could see the sun was setting, but was unable to pinpoint where it was dipping below the horizon, due to the forest canopy and the storm I could see rolling in over the hills. This was the moment I knew I was fucked. I'd gone too far off the trail. My compass wasn't working for some reason. I couldn't navigate by the sun. And even if I could, it was rapidly vanishing. And lightning started to streak across the sky. I thought I knew the score, that I was prepared, that nothing bad could happen to me. I know now, though, that in the wilderness, the score is not something you can ever really know.
I really hate when you do this, Nate.
I could hear my wife's voice in my head as I slid the compass back into my pocket and leaned against a tree. I needed to think of what to do next, but all I could hear was her voice.
I hate it when you go hiking by yourself.
I'll be fine, Marie, I promise, I told her, so sure of myself. So damn sure. I've done these hikes 100 times, and I always come back.
What if you get hurt or lost or a bear attacks you?
She gripped my arm and shook me, an uneasy smile on her face to show she was joking about the bear, but not really.
I swear to you, I'll be okay.
I pulled her in and hugged her. I felt her hands grip my back as she pressed her face into my chest, like it might be the last time. I just need to get away for the day, clear my head.
I kissed the top of her head and ran my hands through her hair.
Can't you clear your head at a golf course?
She spoke softly into my shirt. You know I hate that shit. Besides, I look terrible in those plaid pants. We both laughed a bit, and she ended hers with a sigh. She wouldn't stop me. She never did. Have fun with your girlfriends tomorrow. I'll be home in time for us to grab late dinner. Promise. There I was, though, with twilight turning into night and the sound of rain pattering the trees around me. I should have been on the road to be home for that late dinner, I promised, but I wasn't going to make it. A clap of thunder shook me from my memory and back to the harsh reality of my current situation. I was fucking lost. The rain was coming down harder now, and after several desperate attempts to call Marie or emergency services with the extremely weak signal on my phone, I gave up. I found shelter in a small alcove next to a pine tree, and I blocked myself in with my pack. It was starting to get cold, and I was wet, so I covered myself with pine needles and willow branches. The alcove had some that were still dry, to gain some measure of warmth. Out of curiosity, I checked my compass again, only to see it was now spinning around wildly to find north. I watched it jump back and forth between the letters, going clockwise for a second, and then changing direction on a dime and going the other way. Never, wheat, eat, sour, eat, never, eat, sour, wheat. I said the words from the old mnemonic device in my head each time it stopped on a letter before whispering to myself what I was really thinking. This is wrong.
Of course it's wrong. You're lost in the woods, you idiot.
My wife's voice said from somewhere deeper in my head.
Some kind of magnetic field fucked with your compass, and now you're never coming home.
It wasn't just that, though. It was how I got lost. I'd been in these hills hundreds of times and never had any problem with my compass. What magnetic field? Did it come from the storm? Even beyond that, there was an underlying sense of dread in the middle of my chest that came from more than the fear of being lost and alone. In fact, that was exactly the problem. I didn't feel alone at all. I grabbed the canteen from my pack and drank a little water as I stared out into the woods. Darkness had finally overtaken everything, but my eyes were adjusting enough so I could make out the shapes of the trees that surrounded me. I kept expecting to see the shine of a predator's eyes staring back at me when the lightning would bring the world into clear view for a moment, or the hulking outline of a bear's shadow getting closer. There was nothing, though. No four-legged beasties weaving between the trees on the prowl.
What if there is, though?
My wife's voice spoke again.
What if you get attacked by a bear before you can find your way out or get rescued?
I'll be fine. I answered the nagging doubt in my mind, as if it were actually my wife. I just need to make it till morning, and hopefully the storm will clear, and I can navigate by the sun. I grabbed a protein bar from my bag and took a bite, trying to convince myself of my own words. Maybe in the morning my compass would work. Never wheat, sour, wheat, never. Or at the very least, I could hike to higher ground and figure out where the trail was. I'm not sure how long I sat in my makeshift shelter, chewing on my protein bar and trying to convince myself I'd be fine. But my train of thought was broken by something I certainly didn't expect. I saw something moving toward me through the trees. The outline looked like a person, and it was so unexpected when my eyes caught it that my heart leapt into my throat. It looked like someone with a hood or a rain slicker pulled up over themselves as they walked through the trees. It made me feel uneasy. There wouldn't be anyone searching for me yet. In fact, there was no reason anyone would be out there with me at all. They drew closer and closer, and I shrunk back into my alcove, hoping I could get a better look at them before I made myself known. When they got within about 10 feet, though, they stopped dead in their tracks and just stared in my direction. The feeling of dread grew in my chest as the hooded shadow stood silently in the rain. Suddenly, the figure raised its arm toward me and clicked on a flashlight.
"What are you doing out here, son?"
I heard a gruff older man's voice from behind the flashlight. I pulled my pack out of the way and got to my feet. The man kept his flashlight trained at my face, practically blinding me. "I got lost out here. My damn compass just went crazy." I shielded my eyes from the light, but didn't take any steps closer to him. "Are you a park ranger? Can you lower the flashlight, please?"
"Yep, I'm a ranger."
He laughed a little bit in a way that made me feel uneasy, but didn't lower the flashlight.
"The hills out here can mess with our compasses, especially during a storm. Damn place is full of nickel."
"Just lower the flashlight, please." I shrunk back as he stepped forward, keeping the light shining right in my eyes.
"You're damn lucky I found you, son."
He laughed again, his gruff voice gaining an octave or two as he did.
"Damn lucky."
"Sir, can you help me get back to the road?" The light seemed to get even brighter as he walked forward. "And please, can you get the light out of my eyes?" The whole world seemed to go stark white as he got within arm's length. I suddenly heard my wife's voice again, and not inside my head this time, but from the direction of the ranger.
"You promised you'd be home for dinner," Marie said. "You promised me, Nate."
Suddenly, the light clicked off, and the world around me was dark again. I rubbed my burning eyes and scanned the blur of shadows for the ranger, but I was once again alone. I barely even had time to process what had just happened when I turned toward the alcove, only to find that it was no longer there. It was gone, along with my pack, my water, and my food. I pulled my phone out of my pocket and flipped on the flashlight, thanking God I'd kept it off all day. The battery was nearly full. I did a full 360 looking for where I had just been, but saw only open forest and darkness all around me. My heart began to race, and my confused mind struggled to make sense of what the hell was going on. That's when the whispers began. They sounded like an old woman with a creaky voice, speaking in a language I didn't know. I tried to pinpoint where they were coming from, and as I looked around, I noticed symbols carved into the trees that hadn't been there only moments before. I felt like a terrified animal being toyed with by something that planned to make me its dinner when the fun was over. The whispers grew clearer and clearer, but came from all around me at once.
"What the fuck is going on?"
I shouted at the darkness, proving my utter helplessness.
"What if you get attacked by a bear?"
the whispering old woman responded, before the whole forest seemed to go silent, aside from the rainfall. I realized I was holding my breath, waiting for what could possibly happen next. I was unable to grasp my situation at the time, or even now, looking back at it. I was frozen in my spot, and powerless. That's when I noticed the outline of something large moving slowly between the trees. It turned its head toward me, causing the shine in its eyes to catch my light. I stared into its killer's eyes for only a few seconds, long enough to know it was fixed on me now. Then it charged. I turned on my heel and tried to break into a run, but the thing was on me before I could take two steps. I felt something powerful strike me in the back and send me sprawling onto the wet forest floor. A sharp pain filled my body as huge claws tore through my shirt and flesh with little resistance, and warm blood poured from my wounds as I choked on my screams and pathetically attempted to crawl away. I glanced back to see the frothing mouth of a roaring grizzly standing over me. Its fur was matted and patchy, and sores seemed to be covering its face. Even while bleeding and staring into the face of that nightmare, I could hear the voice of my wife.
"I told you, Nate. I told you not to go. Why don't you listen to me?"
Her voice was silenced by the sound of my own screams, and the bear raked its claws over me again. I was bleeding so badly, I no longer had the energy to move. And though my wounds felt like fire, the rest of me felt like ice. I was lying face down on the forest floor, breathing in the smell of the damp earth. I closed my eyes and thought of my wife's face. I saw her crying. I saw her searching for me and finding nothing but a mauled corpse. Or worse, nothing at all. I prepared myself to feel the claws tear into my flesh again, or to feel the monster bear's jaw wrap around my skull.
"I'm sorry, Murray,"
I whispered. And then I opened my eyes. I was no longer face down, but staring into the sky, feeling the rain pelt me in the face. My body was laid out with my arms and legs fully extended, and my jacket and shirt had been removed. Even though my skin was numb from the cold and my whole body ached, I felt something scratching against my skin, like a needle point being drug across my stomach and arms.
"He's awake,"
I heard an old woman's voice whisper.
"He's not supposed to be awake."
The sound of the voice made me fight through the sluggishness of my own body and try to sit up.
"He was held. He should be held."
A different woman's voice whispered as I caught glimpses of multiple figures retreating into the darkness. Something in a cloak snuffed out a lantern and walked backwards away from me up a tree with the most unnatural movement I'd ever seen. Confused and scared out of my mind, I started examining my body for the wounds from the bear attacks, but found something entirely different. Small symbols had been scratched into my skin. The skin around them was inflamed and burned to the touch. I could hear the women's voices whispering to each other. I could make out at least four different voices, but couldn't hear what they were saying.
"What the hell did you do to me?"
I screamed into the trees as I got to my feet like a drunk. Every limb felt weak and worthless. It was as I stood, I noticed that I was standing in the middle of a circle made of old branches, with four straight pieces placed like corners, like a compass. Never wheat eat sour. Never sour wheat.
"Just lay back down, Nate,"
I heard Marie's voice say, but not in my head. It came from the trees.
"Everything is going to be fine, my love."
It was followed by more whispers and hushed laughter.
"Who are you? What are you doing to me?"
I scratched the symbols on my skin and kicked apart the circle at my feet. The whispers hissed at my actions, and I could feel their eyes on me. Bright white lights like the ranger's flashlight darted between the trees, and headed in my direction. I stumbled backwards, nearly tripping over my own feet and ending up back on the ground. I'm glad I caught myself on a nearby tree, or else I may never have got up again.
"Were your dreams not pleasant, Nathan?"
One of the old crones spoke as if directly in both of my ears at the same time. More cackling laughter followed, and the lights grew closer as I continued to back away.
"Lay down, honey. Everything's going to be okay,"
I heard my wife say to me from somewhere out in the darkness.
"We'll get you back in time for a late dinner after all, kid,"
the gruff ranger's voice came now. All of the voices felt fake, like they were recordings being played through a poor speaker. Behind them, I could hear the true voices, the whispers.
"I want his eyes. I want to taste his blood. He's unprepared. So unprepared. How is he not held? He should have thought he was dead. He should have been paralyzed. The lights will hold him again. We shall finish preparing him."
Then laughter. That horrid, hushed laughter. It was the sound of someone who found genuine joy in my suffering. The whispers were planning to prepare me and eat me? It was hard to say for sure. I didn't know why I could suddenly hear them so well, but knowing what was going on forced my legs into action. I managed to turn from the direction of the approaching lights and break into a run. I couldn't let them catch me. The one before that had tricked me into thinking it was a ranger hypnotized me somehow, trapped me in a dream state. I needed to get away. I needed to find the road. I was freezing cold and aching, but the pain and adrenaline kept me from keeling over and drove me forward. I stole a glance over my shoulder and saw the lights weaving through the trees after me. They had gained too much ground.
"You need to run,"
my wife screamed from the back of my mind.
"Nathan, you need to run like you've never run before."
"Just lay down, and it will all be over soon."
"Just lay down, and it will all be over soon."
Something mimicking my wife's voice echoed through the trees. The tone all wrong, and the pitch just off.
"Just lay down, Nathan, and let me take care of you."
I pushed myself faster, making my lungs burn. My skin felt like ice, aside from where the symbols had been scratched into me. Those burned and throbbed like much deeper wounds. I could feel the lights behind me. They were close enough to light trees ahead of me. I didn't look back. I didn't dare. Out of the corner of my eyes, I could see them getting next to me, dodging through the trees with uncanny speed. There was no false ranger attached to them this time. There were nothing but lights floating a few feet off the ground. They were flanking me and pulling ahead. Soon I'd be trapped back in whatever nightmare they wanted as the whispers crawled from their trees and prepared to butcher me. I needed to get away. Ahead of me was thick underbrush, and there was no way to go but through. I lowered my shoulder and closed my eyes as the lights pushed their way further into my cone of vision and started whiting the world out. I felt my body crash into a thick wall of brambles and branches. I kept my eyes shut tight as I pushed through and feeling thorns dig into my skin.
"Keep going. You have to keep going, Nate."
Marie spoke calmly in my head now, soothing me. I grit my teeth and ran forward, feeling fresh blood trickle down my skin. I could see the brightness of the lights through my eyelids. The things were still close. I screamed out as I pulled myself through. Half naked, bleeding, soaked to the bone, and filled with primal terror, I finally pushed through to the other side of the underbrush and briefly opened my eyes to get my bearings. I was back on the trail. I had a moment of happiness before the lights emerged through the thorns and came straight for me. I shielded my eyes and turned to run down the trail. I could see the glow pulsing behind me, and as I ran, I could feel the blood, rain, and sweat streaking my skin. At the edges of the trail, I could see the cloaked figures fading into darkness as the light approached them. They always managed to keep out of sight, but I could hear their whispers.
"You can't leave us, Nathan. Nothing can ever leave us. We will be with you always. And one day, you will be with us always."
Rasping laughter with manic undertones filled my ears as the bottom of the trail and my truck came into sight. I howled with laughter and pushed my legs harder. My chest hurt, and the scratches covering my body burned. But I was almost there. I was almost safe. Without breaking stride, I fished my keys from my pocket and thanked God I hadn't left them in my bag or my jacket. I fumbled with the door lock for a moment as the lights grew intense in my peripheral vision. I got into the truck and slammed the keys into the ignition with a howl of victory. But before I could turn the key, one of the lights whipped around the front of the truck and hovered just above the hood. It pulsed and radiated with a white-hot light that burned my eyes.
"Sleep, Nathan," whispered the false Marie. "Drive, Nathan," screamed the Marie inside my head.
I turned the key and shut my eyes tight as the engine roared to life. I growled through my teeth while trying to keep hold of my mind as I slammed my foot on the gas and the tires spun to life, sending me hurtling down the trail and back toward the road. I opened my eyes to avoid crashing and ending up right back in the nightmare I just escaped and saw the lights vanishing in my rear view. I made it home just as the sun was coming up and turning the sky a light gray from behind the clouds. I changed into some fresh clothes that I kept in my truck before going into the house and facing Marie. I collapsed in my wife's arms and was unable to even come up with an explanation as to what happened to me until I slept for hours. Eventually, I told her I'd fallen down a hill and through some thorn bushes, losing my pack and gear, and ended up out cold for hours. I didn't know how to tell her the truth without sounding crazy. I readily agreed never to go on a solo hike again when she inevitably asked. Sometimes I wake up screaming. I have dreams about the lights chasing me and hear the whispers asking me to come back, telling me they're always with me. They tell me other things too. They tell me I never got out, that I'm lying broken on the forest floor at their mercy. They tell me that my blood tastes like copper and fear. They tell me that my wife is not my wife, that my house is not real, and that my world is all their design. Sometimes I wake up with dirt on my feet or feel random pains in my body. I hear them laugh at me in the moments where I'm weakest. Earlier today, Marie called me from the other room, and her voice sounded far away, like she was speaking through static. And the whispers laughed. They are always laughing.
That was Whispers in the Woods by Michael Marks, performed once again by the remarkable Jeff Sturtevant. Whether he's lending his voice to spine-tingling narrations or creating immersive audio experiences as an engineer, Jeff's contributions to the horror genre are invaluable. Remember,
You can find his work on Amazon and Audible, or visit flexfiction.com to learn more. Support like yours helps creators like Jeff continue sharing their talents. And again, a special thank you to Velox Books, the publisher of tonight's stories. Velox is dedicated to delivering chilling, weird, and captivating horror tales for readers who crave the extraordinary. If you're a fan of horror anthologies or boundary-pushing fiction, visit VeloxBooks.com to explore their incredible catalog. Well, that's a wrap for tonight, dear listeners. Thank you for joining us on this harrowing journey into the shadows. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, please consider supporting Chilling Tales for Dark Nights by leaving us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite listening platform. For our YouTube audience, don't forget to hit that thumbs up button, leave a comment, and subscribe. Tap that bell icon so you're notified the moment we release new content, and trust me, you won't want to miss what's coming next. If tonight's stories of haunted houses and sinister forests left you craving even more chills, visit ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com and become a patron. Starting at just $7.99 per month, or even less if you choose an annual plan, you'll gain exclusive access to our entire library of content, including ad-free episodes, bonus material, and early access to all our new releases. It's the best way to support the show and keep the nightmares alive. We'd also love to hear from you. Follow us on social media to stay connected. Whether it's Facebook, X, or Instagram, you'll find sneak peeks, updates, and community discussions about the stories you love. And don't be shy about tagging us or sharing your thoughts. We appreciate your feedback and interaction more than words can say. Finally, one last thank you to tonight's narrator, Jeff Sturtevant, and to Velox Books for providing these incredible tales. Don't forget, check them out at flexfiction.com and veloxbooks.com for more captivating horror and weird fiction. We'll see you again next Monday and Wednesday for more stories to haunt your dreams. Until then, stay safe and stay scared. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see Kalshi.com/regulatory.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see Kalshi.com/regulatory.